You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. The role of Hmong pilots in the Vietnam War has not been well known by the general public, but the sacrifices of those who served in support of U.S. troops is now told in their own words in a new book. It's called Fly Until You Die, An Oral History of Hmong Pilots in the Vietnam War. Author Chia Yuyi Vong is a professor in the Department of History at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. She's also Associate Vice Chancellor there for Global Inclusion and Engagement and Director of UWM's Hmong Diaspora Studies Program. Chia, welcome back to the show.
Thank you.
Well, set the stage for us. How did Hmong pilots come to fly on behalf of the American side in the Vietnam War, or as you write, they called it in Asia, the American War?
Absolutely. Well, you know, during the Vietnam War, most of the activities actually took place in Vietnam, but because of the Vietnam and Laos sharing a border, Laos became one of the locations where the United States implemented covert operations. I mean, we did that all over the world, but Laos was one of the biggest operations during the parallel to the Vietnam War. So the air war was, you know, happening in mass volume in Southeast Asia. But so many of the, you know, planes like B-52s and these wonderful fighter jets, they could bomb from really far up in the air. But what the ground troops needed was the close air support. So to make that happen, the United States secretly trained a few dozen Hmong pilots. And it wasn't just Hmong pilots, you know, Lao and Cambodian and Vietnamese pilots trained as well. But for this particular operation, it was called water pump because Laos was a neutral country. The United States, you know, the U.S. Air Force working in collaboration with the CIA would bring these ethnic minority men from Laos to Thailand to train to become these fighter pilots. So that's how we became involved. I say we because, you know, I was a child at the time. And so Hmong men were recruited to, I think the biggest story, people have heard about Hmong soldiers, but most people have never heard about this Hmong people being fighter pilots. So that's what my book is about, tells that story, because it was a, you know, many things were classified until the 1990s. So you began to have the CIA, you know, officials who work with Hmong, U.S. Air Force, and also many American pilots who flew with them in Laos beginning to acknowledge that they actually had worked with these pilots. So that's how it came about, and that's how I, you know, I'm a historian of the Vietnam War, but very few people have written about this. And so that's what my book is about, is to tell the stories of these Hmong men, a few dozen of them that were trained to be fighter pilots, and they had over 50% casualty because they flew very low. They flew these T-28 planes, and these T-20s, the Model A was just a trainer aircraft, but they modified the aircraft to a D model where they could carry a bomb, and they have guns, and that's what happened to many of the Hmong. They provided a very close air support to the ground troops that the United States actually sponsored as well.
Now, you write that initially some of the trainers, the American trainers, were very skeptical. One referred to the Hmong trainees as hillbillies. They didn't think they'd be able to handle flying. Can you talk about that training process and how these Hmong pilots overcame that skepticism from the Americans involved?
Sure. So over the course of their history or our history, the Hmong people were, you know, ethnic minorities who mostly lived on the what I call the fringes of these societies in the mountainous regions. So most people didn't, you know, have access to education during the French era. You know, a few people went to school. So few people had an education. So the idea or the perception or the characterization of Hmong people has always been they were primitive, they're backwards, they don't know much about technology or modern society. And so when when the CIA officials were thinking about allowing Hmong to fly, there was a tremendous resistance from American military and civilian leaders that, oh, you can't train these, you know, hillbillies, not my term, but their term, mm-hmm. Or primitive people who, I mean, some of the stereotypes are that, oh, these are people you're taking off the backs of buffalo one day and putting them on a plane. So there's all these stereotypes about Hmong. You know, and some of the, you know, ethnic Lao leaders didn't think the Hmong could fly, too. So there was a lot of resistance. But because of the nature of the war, And because of the nature of the Hmong, or in particular General Vang Pao, who, you know, worked directly with the CIA, he was a, you know, as many people may already know this, he was the Hmong, you know, military officer who was part of the Royal Lao Army, but he also worked directly with the CIA. And so because of that close relationship, he was able to convince the CIA officials to let a few Hmong begin to train. And then the Hmong men did really well. They all were not men who were taken off the back of buffaloes, just to be clear. All of the men who were selected to train as pilots actually had an average of middle school education. So they were sort of, at the time, the elite of Hmong society. They went to school. They were, you know, several have degrees from the National University of Laos or the teacher training school. So there was resistance, but it was really hard because they had to learn English, and because the language in the air is English. So the men had to overcome a lot of barriers in terms of being an ethnic minority group that people felt weren't suitable to fly these modern planes, but then also to overcome all kinds of ethnic animosity and I think racism as well. They overcame all of that and succeeded in several dozen that completed T-28 training.
We're talking to Chia Yuyi Vong from UW-Milwaukee about her new book. It's called Fly Until You Die, An Oral History of Hmong Pilots in the Vietnam War. And as you mentioned a little while ago, many of these pilots did die, 50% mortality rates you mentioned. One of those pilots who died in the course of duty was Tao Zhang Li. Can you share his story with us?
Sure. It's Tu Xiong Li. He's, one of the T-20 pilots, and, you know, his aircraft crashed, and so he died. And what's really interesting is that many of the pilots, you know, there's beginning in 1967, they were allowed to go train, but you would have a small cohort that would train, and then they would come back to work. And because of the high casualty, before the next group would finish training, most of the group that came before them had passed away, right? So Tu Xiong was an individual who was killed in action, and very interestingly, you know, he left his wife and children. And when I was interviewing, most of these pilots, you know, when they died, their parents and family suffered greatly, whereas before they received financial benefits for being pilots. The families lived much better than other Hmong families at the time. But once the pilots die, you know, the funds start coming, and people then have to struggle on their own. So a really beautiful story. As I went around the country to interview the surviving pilots, I actually was trying to interview his uncle, no, his younger brother, who is still so, you know, the pain is still very real for him. His younger brother lives in Michigan, and I actually made an appointment to interview him. So I went to visit him and then had an opportunity to talk with his son, who was 10 at the time when Tu Xiong was killed. And after I finished interviewing the two of them, his brother, Tu Xiong's brother, said, "Well, my mother is still here. Would you like to talk to her?" I didn't know that. And I said, "Yes, yes, yes, please, you know, let me talk to her." So very long story short, one of the most heart-wrenching stories of the book is about my interview with her and, you know, just her love for her son and the sacrifices that she's made as a result of, you know, having her son pay the ultimate price, right? So he died, and she raised his children, and they all moved to the United States. But for her, the most difficult part was being a mother, like many other mothers, too, that I didn't get to interview, but I've heard from family members. You know, mothers, you know, she lost her son, and so she talks about how every day, you know, since he passed away nearly, you know, more than 40 years ago, the pain is still real. Every time she hears a plane here in the U.S., she thinks about him, and, you know, any recollection of, you know, the old country just brings the pain back. And so, you know, that's what's really hard for me to listen to that.
And you also talked to some of the pilots who survived the war and ended up here in the United States. How did they talk about that experience looking back?
Well, a lot of the pilots, as I mentioned, several of them lived in areas with large Hmong populations, so they have been involved in various Hmong veterans initiatives. But for the majority of them, they came to the United States. They found jobs. They rebuilt their lives in Georgia to, you know, North Carolina to all kinds of places in California, Minnesota, Illinois, Michigan, Massachusetts. And what they did was a lot of these pilots, again, at the time, it was such a dangerous task, but they were indeed the most wealthy in terms of Hmong society because they received pay from the, you know, the Army as well as the CIA. So they lived good lives for the short time that they, you know, did enjoy that. But when the war ended and they were forced into exile, many of these pilots, in fact, just wanted to forget about that part of their life and just to move on and to rebuild their lives. So for several of them, being asked to think about that experience, in many ways, they talk about how healing the process is. It's very painful to remember because they have tried to forget for so many years. But now that they're able to remember and to make sense of that particular time as well as what happened to themselves, their friends, and all of the Hmong people who became refugees after the war, it was a healing process for them. But at the same time, it brings back a lot of pain and anger as well because they know now more than they did back then. Back then, they thought the war was about something different. And then once they get to this country, they better understood the larger geopolitical issues. And that brought some anger into some of the pilots who spoke. And war brings out some of the worst in people. So some of them were very critical of not just American, you know, policymakers and military leaders about the decisions they made, but also the internal political dynamics that happened within the Hmong army. So lots of conflicts there. For example, some of the pilots who were injured but not killed, once they're injured, you know, they're no longer useful to the army. And so it's almost as if they're dead. They're not acknowledged anymore. So that's very painful for several of them. And it comes out really clear in the interviews with them and some of the stories I recount in the book.
Gia, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing their stories with us.
Thank you so much.
Gia Yuyi Vang is a professor in the Department of History at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. We've been talking about her new book. It's called Fly Until You Die, An Oral History of Hmong Pilots in the Vietnam War.